Bean Ulsher. I'm filling in for Leonard Lopate today, and I have to say that any excuse to talk with Myra Kelman is a good one. And over the years, there have been a lot of good ones. There were the children's books that she wrote and illustrated. Max the Dog is her creation. And also then a couple of years back, she provided the pictures for Strunk and White's Elements of Style. They said it couldn't be done. She did it. And then in December of 2001, before that, she managed basically to introduce an icon into our culture, along with Rick Meyerowitz. They did that New Yorker magazine cover called New Yorkistan, reimagining our city in the new context that was suddenly thrust upon us. We had Central Parkistan, Taxistan, Kvechnya, and very, very bad. And the American Society of Magazine Editors named it one of the top 40 magazine covers of the last 40 years. Today, what brings Myra here is The Principles of Uncertainty, also published by Penguin Press. Hi, Myra.
Hello, hello.
So, I'm imagining one of your characters in your book saying, "What a heavy book! Why is this book so..." And I mean it in both senses of the word. It's existential, but also this paper must be... These are taken right from the trees.
It's a tome. You get your money's worth. You're $29.95 or whatever it is, maybe $14.95.
Special paper, is that what it is?
Special paper, lots of ink, lots of, you know, actually there are so many paintings in here that I think the actual ink adds to the weight because it's all, many colors are in the book.
It is a gorgeous book. I have given it as gifts. I know many people who have over the last season. And so now we're going to talk a little bit about what makes it so great. It is, first of all, it started as a collection of pieces in the Times Online, Times Select, which is devoted largely, or was anyway, devoted to op-ed pieces. And then Myra took that idea into a completely different direction. How do you describe what you've done here? What are these things?
You know, with confusion and, and despair, I'll try to, basically it's an illustrated memoir of a year of life where, you know, the way that I work is that I just wander around and I collect images. And so I don't know what's going to happen. And the nice thing about this assignment from the New York Times was they said, "Well, what do you want to do?" And I said, "I don't know." And they said, "Great." And that's the beginning of, you know, the not knowing was exactly what it's about. It's about how you don't know things during the day, how you do know things. You see somebody with an incredible dog or, yeah, you know, somebody who is dancing or...
And you
and
go
it's a
around,
collection.
You yeah. photograph people on the street. Do they ever say, "Hey, don't do that"?
I annoy them. I follow them. there are people who, most people, you know, I don't look like a maniac, so most people are not threatened or alarmed. So I photograph a lot of things and sketch and write and see what happens during the day. And there are right. things that happen that are, you know, and then there are themes that keep coming up.
They don't seem imposed going into it, but they emerge by the end of it.
Right. I need, you know, the column came out once a month and I needed that month yes. or 3 weeks to marinate and percolate and ruminate.
Right.
And eat.
You said one of your questions is how to live and how to die. What's the answer?
Just really simple.
What have you decided?
Oh, my God. I mean, I know, but I'm not telling. on we go. I mean, it really is a kind of, I think I was, lived in England at some past life because it's basically, you know, be plucky and chin up and you'll the tragedies will kill you and the joys will, you know, carry you through.
Mm-hmm. Let's get into some of the specifics, some of the recurring themes I've noticed. All things Russian fascinate you?
Heritage.
Family history.
Family history. You know, that's, I think Tolstoy was my, you know, great uncle. No, but, but no, we come from a great line of peasants. It's funny because I was listening to Zadie say, you know, about how your relatives, what do they do? And I said, they did nothing, but they did so, but I would talk about that forever. That's a lot for me, you know,
relatives.
So,
uh-huh.
yeah.
Knowing who you are, big theme.
Elusive.
Yes.
By the hour, one either knows or doesn't know.
Abraham Lincoln knew who he was. Surprised me to see that you had written that because he struck me, you know, he was melancholic and at wit's end. And
well, I said, you know, that.
Well,
that,
maybe not.
Well, that's what you find. You know, I fear for all of our sanity. But then you have to say, who does not get depressed? And if the larger your aims and your what you're trying to do in life, of course you're going to be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he, you know, he had a vision. So, you know, I like the man very much.
Another recurring theme, the sinks of famous creative people. We have Le Corbusier's sink, is that right? And
yes.
Also Louise Bourgeois' sink.
Yes.
What do the sinks of creative people tell you about their work?
Everybody needs a sink. It tells you absolutely no. Well, actually, Corbusier's sink tells you a lot about minimalism and lack of decoration and kind of stark honesty of what a philosophy is of architecture and how every room you're in really affects how you feel and whether, you know, it's sparkly clean or whether it's dirty. And, of course, you know, if it's dirty, I want to clean it. But that I like the aside of somebody's work, and then there's their sink that they wash their hands in. It's very evocative. I've done a copy of Lucian. When I was in Venice, there was a Lucian Freud show, and I did a copy of his sink with water running. And, you know, it's very meaningful. It's cleaning, and it's washing, and it's water.
Like another children's book, everybody uses sinks. Do you know that book?
You're not making that up?
No, everybody poops is the book.
Oh, okay.
You know, and right. Or isn't that right. The children's book? The thing that I don't get is that the book is whimsical, and like all of your work, it's funny, and then I find myself getting choked up, and I can't figure out why, and I want to know what the secret is. And I think, you know, the hundreds of people who would leave comments at Time Select maybe know the answer. I don't know. You got a lot of response to these pieces. You touched people in their heart. Is it because you've come in through the side door by making people laugh? How do you do it?
I've left the room. I can't answer that. Maybe there's something that that when you talk about these universal truths and the vulnerability of each person. Mm-hmm. If you acknowledge that and say, okay, and here I am trying to do my best, whatever that means. Though I actually spoke to a friend of mine once and I said, everybody's doing their best. And she said, I'm not doing my best at all. But, you know, the sense that you do, everybody's doing the best they can. And there is an empathy to people. So I think that comes across that I actually like the people that I write about. I like the things that I paint. I'm not doing it cynically. I just love all of that stuff called life.
Also, you get into the very big questions of life and the very small, you know, the sink. Everything including the kitchen sink gets in. I also wonder if there isn't something to be said for the fact that when I look at your books, it's not clear to me right away whether I'm looking at a book meant for children or adults. You know, I just glance at it and I realize, well, which book is this? Oh, is it? It's the same. I mean, you're right. Speaking in the same voice.
I'm speaking the same voice, though. I'm toning down the whole death thing when I do the kids' books. It's just a little bit lighten up on the death, but the person is still the same person talking to children or to adults,
Which is rare because children get condescended to so much.
Right, you try not to.
Yeah. Speaking of death, the obituaries, still a favorite pastime?
Yes, absolutely.
Every morning you read the...
Every morning. I mean, sometimes you don't. You scan it and you think, nothing here for me today. Right. Sorry, but yes, every
day. Today, a young actor who died at the age of 25, very sad.
Right. I wasn't that interested in him, but I was interested in Dr. Folkman, who had invented various cures for various treatments for cancer.
Judah Folkman. Yeah. So it's morbid, but at the same time, life-affirming when you read what great people have done and how they live their lives.
Yeah, and also, you know, the obituaries, when you read a good obituary, the piquant details of that somebody chooses to write about, there's a lot of wonderful stuff, and you get to learn a lot of stuff.
I get the feeling, though, that the prose style of the obituaries has declined. Am I wrong?
I don't know. I can't tell.
I remember a time when I would quote to my friends, listen to this line, because the author of the obituary had just gotten it so right. Sidney Omar, the astrologer, died, and then in the first line, we knew what day and what month, you know, and what house the moon was in, you know.
Maybe I think that British obituaries tend to be spicier.
Right. Now, the Times has had great obituaries, and I look forward to more in the future. I tried to channel your life a little bit today. I read the obituaries first thing, and I went to also mentioned in.
Did you have a slice of lemon pound cake? Because that would have been complete.
Not
channeling.
For breakfast.
Okay.
I thought that was a bad idea.
It is a bad idea, but I do it anyway.
Instead, I did think about, you know, your writing about Joe Jr. and why you love it so in The Principles of Uncertainty, which is your new book. What is it about this great diner on Sixth Avenue that is so great?
You find places where you feel comfortable. First of all, there isn't noisy music, which right away makes you. But it's a kind of, you know, it's one of those, it's an iconic place that you go in there. And the language that people use, you know, the vernacular of English. You know, I came to America in the early 50s. And so when that vernacular of, you know, Adam and Eve on a raft, Wreck'em, is so lyrical and right. funny and marvelous.
The
and
language
everybody's
of
really
diners.
The language of diners and the language of quickly ordering things. And everybody has a job and a purpose. And you go in there and you eat your sandwich, and then you can just stare at people eating their sandwiches. It's really a great love of mine. You know, I like fancy restaurants too.
Sure. The people who work at Joe Jr. don't seem to be strong in the mercy department, though, right? It's tough. It's a rough and tumble place.
Yeah, and they have to focus.
Yes.
You know, you can't chit-chat. They're busy.
The Principles of Uncertainty is the newest book by Myra Kalman, and it is published by the Penguin Press, and I am Dean Ulsher, sitting in for Leonard Lopate today. As it happens, there is an exhibition of work by William Steig happening down at the Jewish Museum, also someone who has contributed a few covers to the New Yorker magazine over the years.
And brilliant children's books.
Exactly. He is the creator of Shrek, although I gather the movies bear no resemblance to the books.
And Shrek isn't even, I think, one of the better ones. You know, Spinky Selks or just The Amazing Bone. Brilliant, incredible paintings and writing together. And it's very sophisticated.
What should we have in our minds when we go and look at those pieces at the museum? What do you want us to think about when we're looking at William Steig?
That it's somebody who, was liberated from any confines of, painting. It's like painting for adults and for children. It's like, this person could do both, and they were just telling their story in a beautiful way.
One of the great things about what you've done is that you said, well, this is the way things are done, but this is how I'm going to do it. And that's true in the books that you make. It's true also in M & Co., which is the company that you had with your late husband, Tibor Kalman. The idea was, we don't necessarily know what we're doing, but that's not going to stop us. And maybe that's better, right? This is what you said at the TED Talks, which is circulating online. You should go look at this. As you know, everybody at the TED Talks in California gets 18 minutes. And Myra did that in the last year. And you can sort of get her philosophy of life there. And so that's sort of, what is it, beginner's mind? Is that what the Buddhists call it? You know, approaching something.
Is that what it is?
Without experience.
I'm glad that there is like a really important definition of how stupid we were.
That gives it the legitimacy,
yes,
right?
Exactly. to be a curious person, to be curious. And then the nice thing about getting older is you can admit what you don't know. When you're younger, you kind of think, well, I can't let anybody know how little I know.
Yes, right.
But so there was this sense that we were both, he was really fearless. I was holding
Tibor.
On to him. Mm-hmm. Tibor was fearless and always said, we've got to try this new thing. We've got to try this, new whatever watch design.
I'm wearing my M & Co. watch right now, which has...
Which one do you have?
It looks as if it's hand-drawn.
Those are my, scratch.
That's your handwriting.
But
it was like a multivalent thing. It was did all kinds of stuff, right? For example, what else? Yeah, M&Co.
The studio did, film titles, restaurant interiors. We worked with Florent, which is a wonderful restaurant in the West Village, and identities, the Talking Heads. Album covers and videos. There was just, we'd do something, and then it would be, what would be interesting? It's really about solving a problem with creativity rather than being confined to one special thing.
And you continue to be multimedia. Song cycles written by Nico Muhly based on your texts have been performed in the reading room of the New York Public Library. I was there for that. It was, again, remarkable to me how moving it was. Music does that. And his music is especially moving. But you had crazy words, the text of Strunk and White. You had lots of silliness with you playing a
typewriter and a slinky and a clattering teacup.
You and Isaac Mizrahi and Rick Meyerowitz and others doing this crazy stuff, and yet it was deeply moving.
Right.
Remarkable.
Right.
What's in the future in terms of your multimedia work?
We also, as you had mentioned, had done a music cycle of songs from The Principles of Uncertainty, where Nico set the questions to music, and I didn't participate in that. But so in the ideal world, some theater music event would come out of either of those books, either The Elements of Style or The Principles of Uncertainty, or some combination of storytelling with music and dance, which is slightly scary, but
well,
maybe.
You've collaborated with Mark Morris before. You've made sets
I did sets for, he did Four Saints in Three Acts.
The Virgil Thompson Opera.
And Gertrude Stein text, so it was kind of, you know, and Florine Stettheimer had done the original sets in 1932, so there was a link, there was an emotional conceptual link.
Is Gertrude Stein a mother of you all, in a way?
I mean, think so. And even though some of her stuff, well, let's say a lot of her stuff, is completely unreadable, but the courage and actually the vision of somebody, she created modernism in writing. I mean, maybe somebody else started it with her too, but she was one of them.
So let's go back to TED Talks. I sort of referred elusively to that and didn't really explain what that was. I've never been. We all get to see it now on the internet. It seems as if it's some sort of mystical cabal of smart people who get together and say bright things. Am I right?
Very smarty pants. Yes. You know, you end up eating an ice cream with Murray Gell-Mann, the man who discovered quark, and wondering
physicist.
Whether he's a physicist.
Yeah. Not the German white food. What is, you know, that's like yogurt. They also call that quark.
Oh, right.
This is
yes,
different
so cheese.
From that.
It's
yes.
not cheese.
Right.
It's physics.
It's physics. Which
may be the same thing. We don't know. But and then all I was wondering was whether he was single and whether perhaps he'd like to date my sister. So that was the extent of the depth of my conversation with him. Though I did ask him what was before the world.
Yes.
And he said a tesseract.
And
I said, I have to go now and get another ice cream pop, but I'll see you soon. You know, I mean, so yes, that kind of place where unbelievably smart and accomplished people who are saving, you know, it's like that old joke, you know, the Mel Brooks thing, you save France and I'll do the dishes.
Exactly,
and people
right.
there are saving Africa and, right. and everybody else and everything. And phenomenal
and,
people.
And so they're just brought together hoping that there will be some sort of cross-fertilization.
Yes, that you hear what people are doing, you connect with other people, and it's, you know, Chris Anderson runs it. It's technology, entertainment, design. That's the name TED.
Yes.
And your brain is exploding by day three.
Right. So what is a tesseract?
It's the fourth dimension. It's a shape including the fourth dimension.
I hate that.
I really know what it means. Yeah. In another life, I would. No, it's impossible to understand.
No, it drives me crazy because I want to know what happened before the Big Bang. You know, what's outside the universe?
Sure.
And then the physicists always say, oh, well, you're asking the question in the wrong way. And I just want to slap them because that's what we understand. And then I think about that line. This, I don't know if you know this. Martin Buber once said, you know, if you start contemplating infinity, really the only solution is suicide.
That's right. You'll go. I mean, we say in our family, if you just sit around and think, you'll go mad. It's the same thing.
Right.
You just have to go and wash the dishes and just go back to a real life or have a nice sandwich, you know, go to Paris and eat some pâté because you'll go mad.
What was it like growing up?
It was very long. It took a while. There were trees involved and ballet lessons. My mother was really somebody extraordinary. So I was living in a very funny world, a woman dominated world. My sister is an artist.
You keep talking about your mother
storytellers.
And her beauty. That
yes.
is a dominant theme for you.
She was quite gorgeous.
Her physical beauty.
Yeah, she was something another being.
Your family sounds to me like sort of a very European upbringing. Lots of music and poetry, and you were artistic from the beginning. But you weren't going to be a visual artist, were you?
I was going to be a writer. But the nice thing about our family is that there wasn't ever a sense of, you know, being pragmatic. Nobody ever asked anybody what they were doing or if they were going to school or not going to school. I don't think my parents even knew that I was in college or out of college, in the sense that it was all, whatever I was doing was fine. Benign neglect in some kind of, you know, incredible bubble of good luck. You know, it actually worked well for me.
Right. I'm curious to know I've already asked you about your multimedia projects. I'm thinking now about books in particular. You know, we've had The Principles of Uncertainty, which resulted from this special op-ed series. Before that, The Elements of Style, which seemed, well, how did that happen? I mean,
I found the book in a yard sale by the, you know, briny beach.
Strunk and White, Elements of Style. Everyone who's taken a writing course has learned, you know, in very pithy sentences, you know, avoid digression.
Right. Avoid needless words.
Yes. Omit needless words.
Omit. That's, thank that's you. I really read that well. Yeah.
And then you went ahead and you riffed and you came up with pictures. And
well, of the examples.
Yeah.
You know, Polly loves cake more than she loves me.
And do you imagine
it was
what
easy
that was like?
To, yeah. I mean, it was so easy to do. I picked up the book. I started reading it and I had never used it in school because apparently I never went to school. So when I started reading, I said, my God, who is this wonderful writer? Now, of course, I knew who it was, but the examples were completely graphic and lyrical and funny and visual, and they had a great sense of humor. So it made complete sense to me. Mm. And the family, fortunately, the White family said, hurrah, go ahead.
E.B. White's descendants were happy to have it, which might have scotched the deal. All right, so what's next book-wise?
I'd like to sell some books on the corner at a table. No, I'm writing a few children. I'm actually going back to like the freshness, the palate cleanser of a children's book.
Right.
About Pete, the dog.
Pete is the current dog.
Pete is Max's successor. Yes.
We're looking forward to that. What is it? What is the new Pete book going to be?
I think it's What Pete Saw or Where Pete Walked. We're taking a walk, which is what I love to do most.
You said something that I want to think about as we leave now at the TED Talk, which is your approach to your work is simple or simple-minded. What really is the difference? I'm paraphrasing you. I'm probably paraphrasing you wrong, but...
I wouldn't know. The good news is that I wouldn't know. You have to allow yourself to be stupid in a way that is some kind of groundedness of being able to be stupid and hopefully smart, but that your goal is just to find the true expression of what you're saying. So sometimes it sounds really stupid. Like, what do you mean? You mean there's a chair in the room? You mean I sit on the chair? Okay. I'll start from that. It's elemental.
Myra Kalman, she is the author of The Principles of Uncertainty. It is a new book from the Penguin Press. As we mentioned, it is very heavy, so make sure you bring a bag that you can strap over your shoulder if you buy this book for anybody, because, I don't know, it feels as if it's maybe 6 or 7 pounds, something that
it's
you don't...
It's 2 pounds.
This is a 2-pound book?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, all right, fine. It's, as I mentioned, published by the Penguin Press. Myra Kalman, you can see what she had to say at the TED Talks. And M&Co is in business now, right? Making watches again?
Yes, at MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art, distributes those.
You can see
fine products.
Yeah, very good. Thank you so much for being here today on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Thank you. Delighted.